Hello and welcome to episode 40, 40, 45 of a Thai football podcast with me, Dale Farrington.
And me, Rob Bernard.
How's things, Rob? Good week?
A cracking weekend, mate. Semi-pro football yesterday, followed by watching the Port win on telly, and then today I've had friends round and we've watched the Cicaket game at Bangkok FC. So really good, yeah. And the presentations of the charity money to come on Tuesday. So life's bloody good, yeah.
I've absolutely knocked out with the response to your charity walk. Have you got a final figure for us?
We're looking around 55,000. There might be one or two little bits to come in, but it looks like 55,000, which is astonishing. Thank you so much, everybody.
That is incredible. That's a fantastic effort and well done, Rob. I'm sure the school will really appreciate that. And we might have a bit more on that next week after you've done the presentation on Wednesday. Right, so we better get on with some football talk. It has been a very busy week. First up, we'll rewind to the middle of the week and the League Cup quarterfinals. We had the remaining three games. Mungtong United already through to the semis. And we've got Riza, and he's going to tell us all about Ratbury's home defeat against BG Pathom United.
Thai Football Podcast. Match reports.
Assalamualaikum. Sawadee khap. Good evening from Dragon Solar Park. We are now in the League Cup quarterfinals between Ratchaburi FC against BG Pathom United. And BG Pathom United won the game by 3-0 with their fans cheering. The game itself started very well for Ratchaburi. Ratchaburi hold the ball since first minute of the match. They are able to attack and control the game, but only until the 9 minute. In the first corner of the match, BG Pathom able to score from a header. The exact same support that Buriram also scores with a header. It's unbelievable and unforgiven when you had the same mistake twice in a row. After that goal, Ratchaburi keep on playing their best and attacking all through the game. All through the game, Ratchaburi hold the ball, control the ball, having many chances, having a lot of front goal opportunity, but unlucky for Ratchaburi, unable to score. Until then, left 7 minutes, which is the 83rd minute, Ratchaburi seems had a little bit of change formation. They put a defender in front, hoping to get a score from him, but lacking the back makes BG Pathom easily scores from Chanatip. Another sloppy defensive from Ratchaburi. And just a minute after, Chanatip again scoring to make the winning, and Ratchaburi hope to win the game looks finished. Well, there it is. Ratchaburi played better. I think it's the better team tonight, but BG Pathom with their quality players able to score and win the game. That's for now. See you on the next one. Cheers. Bye. Come on, you Dragons.
Well, I saw bits of this, Dale, and to be fair, BG were very good. But Ratbury, as so often happens when teams have long, good runs, something's going to fall afterwards, and they're having a sticky patch.
They are, but it's been an outstanding second leg for them. We were expecting them to be in the relegation scrap, but they pull themselves well clear. And, I mean, you know, teams go through these difficult periods, don't they, where things don't go quite right. They lost again this weekend at Chiang Rai United. But I think, overall, they've been one of the best teams in the second leg.
Well, when you consider that the main sponsor pulled out, and there was a lot of worries about them at the start of the season, they can't really complain. I watched the Port game at Chiang Rai, very underwhelming. And then the extra time winner for Buriram when my good lady revealed that she likes Buriram to win, which was a bit of a setback, I must admit.
Presumably divorce proceedings have already started, have they, Rob?
No, she cooks a cracking meal, mate.
And that outweighs her support for Buriram United?
Definitely. Well, a real test for her when we go through there in a couple of weeks.
Just very quickly on that subject, I remember once we were having our satellite TV fixed, and one of the technicians who turned up was wearing a Mungtong United shirt, and my wife resolutely refused to let him in the house. In fact, I don't even think she let him on the property. He had to stand on the road outside while the other bloke came in and did all the work.
I'm getting to like Nui more and more.
That's when I knew she was a keeper. I was very proud of her on that occasion.
This is Clinton, and you're listening to a Thai Football Podcast.
Next up, we've got an interview with Kian Boonpen. Now, Kian had a very interesting upbringing in football. He spent most of his young life in England, and he was at Chelsea, Reading, Leicester, and a couple of other clubs in their academies. And now he's moved back to Thailand. He's opened his own academy in Bangkok, the Euro Football Centre. And this is the chat we had earlier in the week.
A Thai Football Podcast interview.
So, hello, Sian, and welcome to a Thai Football Podcast.
Hi, Delph. Thank you for having me on.
You're here to talk about your new venture, or your relatively new venture, which is the Euro Football Centre in Bangkok. But before we get on to that, can you just give us a little bit about your background? I'm detecting a slight London accent there as well, mate.
So my name is Sian. I'm from a Thai background, so my parents are Thai. But we relocated to England when I was 1 year old. So I grew up in England before relocating back to Thailand at 19. For me, football's been in my blood and ingrained in me since as early as 5, 6. And then I started playing in England at 7 years old. And yeah, I was a minority, you know, being the Asian player in Sunday league kind of culture in England. I played in that. And it wasn't before long that I got scouted by Chelsea, and that's like a local club for me. I went in there at 8 years old. Okay, I didn't get signed at the academy there and continued on Sunday League. But throughout playing Sunday League, then I was getting scouted at the tournament. So in England, in the summer, the culture is when the leagues is off, they organize lots of the tournaments. And that's where it's a good opportunity where scouts come down and they have a look at the players playing in the Sunday League level. At those tournaments there, I got scouted by Reading and Fulham, also quite local clubs. So I was in between those two clubs for a while. And then when I hit 12 years old, King Power, which is Thai company, bought Leicester City. So I was the first Thai player at that time going straight into the academy under 13s, I think it was. Of course, you know, I was used to playing then kind of quite high level. You know, the academy football in England is, I think I would go as far to say, is the highest in the world. So at Leicester, and then after that, I was at QPR, so closer to home, because Leicester was not easy. After school, I would have to finish school Friday, drive up. My parents would have to drive me up to Leicester, sacrifice work. You know, I've got a sister as well they needed to take care of at that time. So it was difficult. So come back to QPR, that's much closer to home. Then I was at QPR until I didn't get a scholarship there. That was quite a decisive moment at 16. And at that point, what happened was Thai owners, a consortium, bought Reading. And at that time, they contacted me through my family and stuff. I got in contact and I went into Reading. And then I did bounce around non-league a bit, but I realized quickly it wasn't for me, and then made that decision to come back and play in my country. You know, I'm grateful to have that opportunity to have dual nationalities, holding British and the Thai passport. So at 19, I made that decision to come back to Thailand, and I signed at Army United, and I played in a few clubs in Thailand at T2 level before deciding that I would pack it in at 24, which was a hard decision to make at 24, which was around now 2 years ago. And that was when I stopped. Straight away, I went into coaching. Yeah, so that's a bit about me.
So when you were at these various clubs in England, I'm guessing you must have worked with some top name coaches and probably trained alongside some players who've gone on to be quite successful in the English game. Is there anyone you worked with or played with who's gone on to have a career in England?
Yeah, for me, in terms of coaches, one person that comes straight to my head because of his success over the last 10, 15 years is someone called Lee Heron. Lee Heron came from the background of being a community coach at Reading. So he wasn't even directly involved in the academy side of things. Most recently, I saw that he was like overseeing the head of academy at Arsenal. So working with someone like that, that's an example of someone that I worked with that has gone on to then coach at the highest level. And then in terms of players, straight away, I would mention my best friend, who is Omar Richards. We lived together in Diggs when I played at Reading in the under 18s time. Because it's a little bit far from home, we had to stay with the host family. So I was in the same house with Omar Richards. We were training together. And so Omar Richards went on and then eventually played for the Reading first team. And then from nowhere, he got a move to Bayern Munich. Not only just by, like, you know, he won the Bundesliga. Now he's playing in Olympiacos, currently going into the Europa Conference League semi-finals against Aston Villa. That's the kind of caliber of players that I was playing with Another name is Gabriel Osho. Gabriel Osho playing for Luton Town, centre-back in the Premier League now. You know, and still to this day, we're close friends. And that is the level that I was playing at when I was in England.
It must have been a great experience. Even though you didn't break into the first team at any of those clubs, it must have been great. And for you to get all that experience and play alongside these people and, like you say, have the experienced coaches passing on their wisdom, must have been fantastic as a young boy.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. As I say, like, you know, and I think it's not just me that thinks it. I think the whole world looks at the Premier League, and I think I'm not wrong in saying that it's still number one football league in the world. You know, it's got the highest investment, how they manage the clubs right from Premier League to League Two, all those 92 professional clubs. So in terms of how everything's managed there, I think it's difficult to find another country in the world that can compete with the English youth system for me.
It must have been interesting then leaving that behind and coming back to Thailand. Was it Army United you went to?
It was a different world.
I've got a few friends who are coaches in Thailand, and like you, they're Thai, but they've either done their degrees or their coaching certificates in England. And for them, it's quite difficult as a coach coming back from this culture to the Thai culture and having to adapt. How did you find that? Having, you know, I mean, Chelsea, massive, massive club, and even clubs like Reading and Leicester, you know, big clubs in England. How did you find coming from that situation to being at a Thai club? How did you cope with that?
To be honest, it took time with the basic things such as weather, but also even culture. Even that I am Thai people and Thai players, you know, it's the other side of the world. They have a different mentality. So it did take some time. But at the end of the day, one thing I will say is football. It's a ball, 11 players on one team, 11 players on another team, whatever country you're in, you know. So yes, there are the differences with the weather, the language, the food and all of the obvious. And of course, they can have effect. But, you know, if we remember the point that it's football is football, you know.
You stopped playing at 24. Was that down to injury, or did you just fancy a career in coaching?
If I be honest with you and honest to myself, the truth is I didn't hit the expectations and the targets that I set myself or that other people kind of expected of me. Coming from England, coming from that background, I had media attention on me from Thailand since I was between the ages of 10 to 14. So there was expectation. And as I say, between 19 and 24, I spent 5 years applying myself every day, 100%. At 24, I just had to be a bit more realistic and realize, like, okay, I've not got the appearances in T1 for whatever reason. It's not happening. I'm not in Buriram. I'm not in Thaiport. I'm not in Bangkok Glass. I'm not at the national team. So I just had to have a self-assessment, really, of that. And then I thought, if I'm not there, it's like it came at that time, sorry, as well, where I got a job offer to coach. So I had a conversation with my family and I just went for it, you know? And that's when I just spoke to my coach at my last club. I was playing in Customs in T2. And I just came in one day and I just said, sorry, you know, I want to cancel my contract here and I want to go into to do something else, which was football coaching.
It must have been very difficult for you, but I think it's a very full of admiration for you. I think it's very commendable because I think there's probably hundreds of players in a similar situation to yourself would have just plodded along. And for you to do that, it was a very brave step. And, you know, all credit to you for that. I think you deserve a lot of praise for it. So what about your early times in coaching? What badges did you take? How did you get experience?
You know, it's quite an organic and it's a step that it was not into another industry or another job or another work. You know, I was still working in football, which, like I say, is everything that I know from 7 years old. But of course, you're coming into the football as a different role then. And it took some time to realize that. But for me, the one thing that I think that I picked up straight away was of how my management and handling with the kids. I think I have good relationships with the kids and good energy with the kids, like straight from day one. And that hand in hand with my already developed knowledge within football, right? Having been in the game from 7 to 25, and having been coached by some of the, you know, like I mentioned, some of the names of that I've been coached by, the clubs that I've been at. I kind of just incorporated that into my style, really. So that was how it started, really. And it didn't take long to kind of get the hang of the job.
How did Euro Football Centre come about? What was the thinking behind that?
My first coaching job was at an international school, Bangkok Patana. So when I went in there, I was doing good job and the kids was enjoying my sessions. I was doing various different sessions with girls, with boys from ages 4 to 16. After months of doing that and building up good rapport with the students and the kids, a lot of them were engaged and really like my style of coaching. My partner as well, Coach Sam, he was also in Bangkok Pattanasi. See, he's actually another co-founder of Euro Football Center. And he was kind of similar background with me. He's half Thai, half English. And he's also a top coach. And the kids were enjoying his sessions. But you need to not forget, we were in a school model. We were coaching inside the school, only for the school, on the ECA program, which is like an extra curriculum activity. So I had this vision of thinking like, what can I provide on outside then for the kids? And that's where me and Sam, who is also the co-founder, got together and basically put the plans in place for Euro Football Center. And like I said, I played here 5 years. Over those years, I had good friends. And one of those was Elias Dolla from national team, Thai national team. He's half Thai, half Swedish. It was just a phone call that I called him and asked if he would be interested on collaborating on a project, on this project. At that time, we didn't have even the name. We sat down and we got the name. We got the logo, and then we just, ever since that day, just worked on it and put all our passion, all our energy onto this project. And that was around a year and a half ago now.
So what kind of age groups are you working with?
So at Euro Football Center, we accept kids from as young as 4 years old until we have the age group at under 16. After that, I built another project, is the first team model, to attract, you know, and build a pathway kind of for the kids after 16, 17. They can play in the first team there. The way we try to design it now is kind of like on a Sunday league English structure kind of model, where me and Sam have experienced that firsthand in the UK. And we think that that model, we would like to, as closely as we can, replicate it in Bangkok, if that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense. It sounds good. Although I must admit, Sian, when you say Sunday league, for me, that conjures up images of fat old fellas like me, hungover from the night before, waddling around muddy pitches, kicking lumps out of each other.
No, so, yeah. I just mean like when we were young, you know, not everyone can play in a professional academy, right, in England, but millions of kids love football. So what do those kids do? They have a Sunday league club, which might be their local team club, and they train once, twice in the week, and they play a match on Sunday. And there'd be 10, 12 teams in that league, and that would be the kind of platform for those kids to then, like, you know, like I said, then there's tournaments, the scouts will come and then take them to the professional academy. So that's kind of what we're trying to model it on. And then that, what I say is, if we have then a talented elite young player where we have the network and the experience, we don't want to keep them always, right? We want to pathways for players into the professional game.
Yeah, and like you say, you've got all the right connections in that regard, haven't you? And what about your own team? I did notice on your Facebook page, you do have a first 11, and I think you played, didn't you, at the weekend? Am I right?
It's a new project for us at Euro Football Centre, and it spirals off of the academy, and it's directly linked. Like I said, we go up to under 16s, and in Thailand, it's quite, I wouldn't say it's its finished product in terms of under 18s, under 19s, under 21 football or non-league. There's not much of a structure for that. So the closest thing that I could find to it was this league called BPL, which is Bangkok Premier League, which consists of like kind of semi-professional level and university players in the Bangkok area. It's not a business model in the clubs. It's like people that want to play football and those ages that I mentioned, kind of university, semi-pro level players. My idea and the idea of us that we've come together is that we want to blend experience with the youth. So ex-professionals like myself and a few others, like, for example, I have a friend called Nico Bergold. He's a coach in another international school, but he's also my friend, like similar path with me, ex-professional football player. We have a few current pros in like the third division. They come and play with us in their off season. And that's where we want to provide that value for elite, talented 16, 17, 18, 19 year olds who might find themselves without a club. We want to be that platform where they can come and get regular match time with us. And if there's a player that demonstrates real potential, we can then assist them with going back, you know, with a way and a pathway into the professional game.
It all sounds very exciting. I'm really impressed with what you've done, mate. Honestly, it's been a great journey you've been on. So I'm going to give you a couple of minutes now. You can plug Euro Football Centre. How do people get in touch? Is there a selection process? Do you go out and scout players, or do they come to you? So you've got a couple of minutes now just to sell yourselves to everyone who's listening.
Euro Football Centre. you know, like I said, we're open for ages as an academy 4 to 16, and we have a first team program, which is a pathway after under 16s. We have two programs, so we're open to players of all abilities, being the development and academy program. If the parents is interested, they'll either see our social medias. We're big on Instagram, Facebook, and we're trying to push our YouTube. You can contact us through Line, which we have Line. You can type it in. It's at Euro Football Center. I prefer myself to be the point of contact. So when they contact, they're actually speaking directly with me, and I am able to answer directly straight away and handle all the inquiries as and when they come in. And I will walk through the process of evaluating already what is the current player's level and what program he will be suited for. Various programs, each program's different. If it's the academy one, like I said, we model it on that Sunday league structure that I experienced as a youth player in England when I wasn't in a professional academy. So typically that starts at under sevens, under nines, and it's under 11s, under 13s, and under 16s. They have a training program, and then they play a match on the Sundays against another local academy or another local international academy in the area, and they're in each relevant league for their age group. Then the development package is more for kind of beginner level players that want to learn the basics, and that's where they're not for a match program, they're just for the training program. So basically two programs, ages 4 to 16, and a first team program as a pathway. Where I think that we are unique in regards to how we work and how we kind of manage our club is the fact that we as coaches and as board members, we're all quite young, you know, and we are all football in our blood, you know. And if you look at the three co-founders, is myself, Coach Sam, and Elias Dollar. Us three, we spiral from football from the ages 6 and 7 years old. Like I say, Elias Dollar, the level that he's playing now, he also experienced in Sweden. We share the same values with Half Thai. So when we come together, we basically want to provide all the experience and knowledge that we have kind of equipped ourselves with over the years of being within the game, you know, in different clubs, in different countries. And we feel that that's value that we can give to the kids that come to learn with us, basically. You know, we're passionate about everyone that's with us. We focus everything for the player development. That's at the core of everything we do. The most important for me is the children is enjoying their football. I focus a lot on that word enjoying because, you know, that's why we all play at the start as kids, you know. I think players, and that's youth player or adult player, senior player, will play their best football when they're enjoying. We try to create an environment that is enjoyable, but also professional. Yeah, in short, you know, if players are interested to contact us, they can come for a free trial, and then we can go from there, really.
I love your philosophy. I think enjoyment sometimes gets forgotten, doesn't it, in football? And yeah, that is what it's all about. You know, we all want to enjoy it, whether we're watching, yeah, playing, coaching,
definitely,
whatever.
Definitely.
So we'll put all your contact details in the notes for this podcast, and people
Thank
can
you,
get
Dave.
In touch with you. And I'd just like to wish you all the best for the future, and I hope it's a great success. It sounds like it's going to be. Thank you so much for coming on. That's been a fascinating interview. I've really enjoyed that, Sian. So.
No problem, Matthew, and I've enjoyed it as well. Thank you so much.
Yeah, a few things to take out of that, Dale. There's a lot of competition academy-wise in Bangkok, but I tell you what, the Euro Football Centre's got a fantastic social media presence, really on the ball, and that does attract people. As I say, it's very competitive. I guess a lot is down to how good the coaches are, how much is charged. What I like about Sian is he's been to a lot of clubs in England. And when I used to follow non-league football deeply there and help do programmes and look into pen pictures, collecting it for different teams, there was an awful lot of lads in the same position to him, drifted around and just went from club to club, whereas he's done something really positive. And I think that's fantastic.
Hi, my name is Tim, and I'm listening to a Thai football podcast.
On to the weekend now. It's been a very busy weekend of football. The T2 fixtures concluded. Obviously, everything was wrapped up last week as regards the title, but now the playoff places have been decided. So we know the four clubs who are going to be competing in the playoffs, and they are Rayong, UT United, Nakhon Si United, and Chiang Mai. Out of those four, Rob, who are your favourites to go up to the Premier League, or the T1, should I say?
You'd have to say Rayong, wouldn't you? They've had a solid run, and they put the goals away, which is good. It'd be great, personally, if Chiang Mai went up, because I've got a lot of affection for that city, you know. And, you know, it's a big city. It needs a T1 club.
It does, but they don't really attract the crowds, do they? I mean, considering the size of the city and the area, Obviously, they're competing with Chiang Mai United in that respect, but neither team seems to be pulling in the crowds. You know, we don't see anything like what we get in places like Sisaket, Buriram, Nakhon Ratchasima, or even Konkan.
They sort of pay the penalty with it being a tourist city, a lot of people being involved in that. Although you say that, we often mention the P word on this show. They did sell out that day when they beat Buriram to defy them the league title.
They need more days like that, though, don't they? But I think one of the pleasing things for me, the playoffs in T2, is that the four clubs that made it, only a few points separated them. I don't like it when you get a team finishing third who are like 18, 21 points clear of the team who finish in sixth. It seems a bit unfair to me. So it's in that respect, it's good. And I'm like you, I want Rayong to go up purely for Peapop Onmo, who's one of my, not only one of my favourite players, but one of my favourite people. He's a lovely guy, and I'm absolutely delighted for him to see him doing so well. It hasn't been mentioned, or at least I haven't seen it mentioned, so I'm going to whisper it quietly, but future Chonburi coach?
Well, you never know.
That's the top of the second division, bottom of the first division. Few teams are starting to pull away now. It's getting, what did Fergie call it, squeaky bum time for a few clubs, including my own. And they blew a massive chance at the weekend when they lost at home to Nakhon Pathom United. And Rob spoke to a very happy visiting fan.
Yeah, welcome along to the podcast, Lyle. Oh, you're a Nakhon Pathom United fan. How's that come about?
I moved out from Bangkok when I got married 8 years ago. And I've got to admit, I didn't start following the Nakhon Pathom United until back end of last season when they were going for the championship. But we followed it on Google and stuff like that. And my missus is a big football fan. She's a big Borough fan like me. And we decided we'd start going. Obviously, with them getting promoted on the last game of the season, it was a fantastic experience, but we got to know a lot of the fans. We didn't have many friends that went along. It was a couple of family members, but everybody was so warm and welcoming. It was a bit like being at the Borough, you know, a very friendly club, and we've got on with everybody, and now we're going home and away.
Yeah, it's Nakhon Pathom United's first season in the top flight since 2009. You've got to be happy with how it's gone.
Without doubt, Rob. Going back to the first game of the season against Port, we actually could have won it. We could have won it 3-1. Ended up with a 2-2 draw. I think Atik Berg missed a penalty. But they've done incredibly well. Of course, it was a big disappointment straight after we won the championship to see Coach Tom go off to BG. And then sadly, obviously, funnily enough, we played BG just before the Asia Cup break. Fantastic win for us, 2-1, with Tako Itu scoring some blinders. But I have to say that he is sorely missed, his Coach Tom. You know, he came out after he resigned from BG and said that he couldn't handle the stress and the strains of managing a big club. But he's sorely missed. You know, we got Akbar in, who's obviously, you know, a Singaporean, and he's doing very, very well. The rumour is that when Coach Tong's at some of our games, Akbar's listening to him. I take that with a pinch of salt, to be quite honest with you. But in all fairness, what Coach Tong was able to do, certainly in T2, was he read the game very well and he made the tactical decisions, whereas with Akbar, he waits until half-time and then he makes that decision. And on a few occasions, well, more than a few, probably five or six, I think if he'd made this a different change of his tactics to suit the game that was being played, we probably would have got some more points. But I think after the game on Saturday, when, well, obviously we beat Chonburi, that's given us another breathing space. With a bit of luck, I think we'll stay, but it's a hard running, Rob, very hard.
Obviously, we get plenty of feedback from fans watching and we monitor Twitter. And to be fair, your lads are getting a good review, you know, for the style of football you're playing. Would you keep the coach or would you go back to your old guy, given the option?
That's my personal preference. You know, what Coach Tong has been able to do, and he's gone to the under-23s now, I think, and he's popping up here, there and everywhere. But he's very good at bringing a team up. And I think he's a little bit more pragmatic. He's a little bit younger than Akbar. But yeah, for sure, the spine of the teams for Thai football, I think it's very great. I'm entertained. I'm entertained every game we go to. We know we're not going to win all of the games. But right from the goalkeeper, Watanachai, pretty good keeper. Centre-half, Cicchini, I think he's one of our most underrated players. Down the wings, obviously, you've got Atik Berg, you've got Tako Itu on the left. And then for me, there's two standouts for us this season. That's Natanan in central midfield. And without question, our captain, Leslie Abloh. I mean, he's just rolling back the clock. He was originally a striker and he was with Nakhon Pathom a while back and then went to police and he's come back. Could have gone somewhere else on bigger money. but the goals he's popped up with and his enthusiasm, he's a proper 110% player. And I think without him and his experience, I think we would have struggled. But it'll be interesting if we stay up, what we're going to do. I mean, there's obviously a lot of rumours at the moment about Natanan maybe going off the Mumtong. There's all the big rumours about Atterberg and Buriram. But keeping hold of those sort of players and then building, provided we stay up, and I think we will, I think, you know, there's happy days to look forward to.
Sounds right, yeah. So far, I mean, we're four games from the end of the season. What would you say was your most enjoyable match this season?
For me, BG. I mean, we went there, it was Christmas Eve, didn't expect to win, and to be 2-0 up. I mean, the first goal was a cracker, which launched, it was route one football, launched straight down, Takahita just chipped it over the keeper. Second one was a deflected free kick. But it was just a fantastic atmosphere. Ratchaburi away was good as well. Takahita scored an absolute peach. If they do a goal of the season, I think it would be a contender, at least in the top three. And I have to say, Saturday, we took a good compliment down on Saturday. It was one of those performances you're proud of. You know, given that we'd played Bangkok United, we'd taken a lead the week before, and then it was 1-1, 97th minute, sucker punch. The lad could have cleared it in a row Z, decided to play football in his penalty area, lost it, and he's in the back of the net. Very disappointing. Fans actually turned, actually, for the first time I've ever seen to that game. But the enthusiasm right from the start, you could tell everybody thought there was going to be a win. And then to get the goal, it was an absolute peach from Ablor. And then obviously we went down to 10 men after, what was it, 49, 50 minutes? I mean, we certainly dominated the first half. Second half, backs against the wall, you know, but it got it over the line in the end and a well-earned 3 points. And I think 3 points that give us, as I say, that cushion, that six-point cushion from third from bottom.
I've been looking for your last four fixtures and they're up to dream games, really, with BG and Buriram at home, and two of my favourite grounds to visit on your travels, Chiang Rai and Port. Till then, obviously, you can't give opinions about those two, but you are in for a treat if you get to either.
I'm already booked, so I'm flying up to Chiang Rai on the Friday. But, you know, yeah, Buriram, for me, come on, let's face it. I went actually to see Buriram play Ratchaburi the week before last. They played some exceptional football. They played exceptional football against us when they beat us 4-1 when we were at their place. But for me, if we can just keep the score down, you know, we've got that. Then we've got, obviously, Chiang Rai away, as you say, went on an awful run, didn't they? Something like five or six games defeated. They then get the win. And then I watched the game last night and lo and behold, they get that winner right at the end. That's probably them safe. And then, as you say, we've got BG at home. Again, tough game, but it's doable. And then, obviously, as you say, Port away last game of the season. And I'd like to think that on that Sunday, when we're all sucking ale before the game, that we're safe and we can just enjoy the game. You know what I mean?
You'll certainly enjoy it there. The fan zone. Go in the home section fan zone. You won't get any bother. Loads and loads of food for your stalls. Great atmosphere.
All my mates at work, Rob, they're all Port fans. So
we'll look after you.
I don't need looking after.
On your away travels, what have you found to be the best experience, sort of fans away day?
I'll have to say, BG for me is a great game. Obviously, because the it's only an hour and 10, hour and 20 minutes drive for us. But in terms of just seeing that difference in, I won't say class, but difference in net worth. I mean, the layout that Buriram have got is just incredible. When we're lucky enough to be able to fly to most of the long away games, Rob.
Yeah.
You know, I really take my hat off to a lot of our travelling fans. You know, obviously they had the coach accident as well when we played Sukhothai. You know, they don't have put the miles in on some of the most dangerous roads in the blooming world, but. Yeah, for me, Buriram, I mean, it was just, you know, you drive up there, they've got the grounds are all laid out there and you just see the stadium. And I have to say the atmosphere was fantastic. And not a full compliment that we took, and it certainly wasn't full there. But, you know, it's a different world up there when you compare like ourselves and all the other teams that are playing in municipal stadiums. It was just a fun day out. And the fans were great. They're certainly great with us. So for me, yeah, BG away and Buriram.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Now then, if you have to say what you like most about Thai football, what would you, if anyone's sort of listening for the first time, how could you recommend Thai football and give it a go?
I've made so many more friends through Thai football, and not foreigners, working class Thai lads. And for me, that's part and parcel of football. You know, Rob, you're from the same neck of the woods as me, up in the northeast, especially Middlesbrough, Scarborough, Whitby, Skelton, places like that. We're all working class lads. We all work hard and we love our football on a Saturday or a Sunday. And they don't have, I mean, they're very, very passionate. So there's that. I find also, particularly the foreign players, are a lot more engaging with the fans. I mean, I've only really been going for a season and a half, but I've got a list, as long as your arm, of foreign players that will reach out to me, or I'll reach out to them and have a bit of chit-chat and get a bit of gossip from them. And I don't think you get that in the Premier League, let alone the AFL. So for those that are really interested in football, and certainly my job as well, you know, there's opportunities there for me to help them, which has come my way as well, which is very nice. But yeah, I think there's a lot more engagement. You know, I don't think the standard's that bad, Rob. I'm certainly entertained, and I have to say, with a heavy heart, I get more now out of going to watch a comp at Tom Home and Away than I do sat at home watching the Borough. Yeah. And I think the reason is because I went Home and Away from 82 through to 1990 when I moved to London, and it was just a way of life. And you just couldn't wait to get out the door and into the transit van and get to the away games or wherever you're going. But I do. I find that's where I'm happiest at the football. And of course, you know, a lot of people don't know what you're saying as well. So you can speak your mind at the football, and nobody gives a tuppenny damn. For me, it's part and parcel of the game.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was when I grew up, and I know it's all changed. You know, I was at the Riverside back end of last year, and it has changed without question. But, you know, the air's blue with the lads that I stand with, and it just makes me smile because it just reminds me of following my local team. But so many positives. I think the only negative I can give you is if you haven't got that spare cash to be able to take the plane to the away games, by God, it's a slog. You could talk about going to Shanghai. God knows what time they're going to wake up. I play for the supporters football team as well, even at my age, Rob. And most of the away games, so Konken, we played their supporters team. I think there's a Shanghai game before the match. So the bus has to set off earlier for the lads that play in the supporters team as well. So I think that's the big negative. And I think the only other thing, obviously now I've met you, and I'll just have to compliment you on your podcast because I think it's very, very good and very well produced, and you get some really good guests on. But I like picking up a paper and reading about the football, and I do miss that. Sunday morning, tea and toast, or a fry up, you know, and get the paper out and read about the football. And I think that's something you miss. I suppose it's people like you and me who are passionate about football that should get our asses into gear and sort something out like that. But I think it's just too difficult. It's just hard. And then once you've got it going, it's hard work doing it. So I applaud you for the fantastic job you do with your podcast. For me, if more of the Thai fans manage to be able to get the translation put on a lot of the posts they do, commentaries about games, if somebody was out there was going to be willing to do it, I think it would go down very well. But then you've got to have a network, haven't you? You've got to have a network of people that are going to help and subscribe to you and send in match reports and stuff like that. And it's hard work. Everybody's working. And as I say, you and Dale do a very, very good job.
Cheers, mate. No, it's lovely to talk, Lyle. Obviously, Dale's still hurting from the defeat on Saturday night, but he'll get over it. It's going to be an interesting end of the season. Thanks very much for your time.
My pleasure, Rob. All the best, mate, and up the Borough.
Yeah, thanks ever so much for that, mate. Good to have another new voice on the show. And a great victory for your team.
And one he's been celebrating for quite a long time. I think he's gone a bit overboard in his celebrations, but you can forgive him that. Now, just in case there's anybody wondering, I didn't refuse to interview him because they beat Chonburi. I was at work and I couldn't do it. So Rob very kindly offered to step into my shoes. So thanks for that, Rob. And I didn't chicken out of it. I want to make that clear. I did not chicken out of that interview. It was all arranged before the match had even taken place. So there you go.
It was cheaper than an interpreter having two sort of North Riding lads chatting to each other.
It's just a shame we can't have subtitles on the podcast, unless you watch on YouTube, which you do get subtitles.
All joking aside, Dale, it's still a jungle down there at the bottom of the division.
It is. And I stand by what I said a couple of months ago. I think Chonburi are doomed. I really do. I think they've given up to all intents and purposes for the reasons that I've already stated. Sad to see 19 years unbroken run in the top flight coming to an end. And to be honest, even if we didn't go down this season, we would definitely go down next year. So we might as well be put out of our misery. And the sooner it happens, the better.
Oh, you never know what's around the corner. I'm not picking on you, Bill, sucker tie Bill, but beware. You're in a bad run, mate.
That was Rob who said that, Bill, not me. Just remember that.
No, in all seriousness, they are nosediving.
Now we're going to drop down into T3. And the big game this weekend, undoubtedly, was the T3 playoff final. Bangkok FC against Sisaket United. Now, both teams are already promoted, so they're guaranteed T2 football next season. This was just to determine who the overall champions were. And Kevin was there for the podcast. So here's his report.
Tied to the podcast. Match report. Hello, Dale. Thank you so much for having me back on the podcast. I completely forgot to record when the game kicked off. So it's about 7 minutes in. It's still 0-0. But let me tell you, the atmosphere over here is crazy. I really hope Bangkok FC wins, but you know what? Sisaket have turned up over here. The away fans have filled up their end, and they've been loud for some time as well. So whatever happens, I hope the best team wins. It's going to be a fun night out. 16 minutes into the game, it has been end-to-end, really entertaining. The score is still 0-0, but Bangkok has had more shots. Oh, Sisaket is on the attack over here. Good save by the keeper. Oh my god, almost had one. Sisaket with the free kick over here in a really dangerous position. Is this gonna go in? The away end is quite loud right now. He's taken it. It's deflected. Oh, it almost went in. Oh my days. What a game this has been. It's been only 20 minutes. Now it's Bangkok FC's turn to take a free kick, and the Sisaket United player was not happy about it. I think the ref should have booked him for, you know, misconduct, but he's let it slide. Just listen to the crowd. I mean, just take the crowd's reaction. It's crazy. It's really nice seeing an atmosphere like this for a T3 club. Come on! What a free kick! Look at the atmosphere here! Come on! Another free kick for Bangkok FC at, you know, a similar position from where they scored. Can they really make this 2-0 or not? He's taken the free kick! Another header! Oh! He almost scored that one too! 45 minutes in, there has been so much drama already in this game. Super end-to-end. Really entertaining game of football right now. To be honest, it's better than most Thai League 1 games I've been to. Okay, so there you have it. It's halftime here at Bangmot. Bangkok FC are leading 1-0. But let me tell you one thing. I think you probably have figured it out from my match report so far. This game has been super end-to-end and it has been really entertaining. And you know what? Props to the away fans. They've filled up their section. They've been really loud. And I think that plays a huge part in making, you know, the game much more entertaining. So props to the Sisaket United fans. But let's hope Bangkok go and wins this game and eventually lift the trophy. Okay, so I went out to get some drinks for myself. Apparently, water, Coke, Pepsi, Sprite, all the soft drinks have been sold out. The only thing that's left is beer. This ref, man, I swear to God, like, he just gave a free kick to Sisaket and it was clearly not a free kick. I don't know what that is, but you could see, like, you could probably hear the fans of Bangkok FC showing their dissatisfaction. It was never a free kick. Anyways, it's in a really dangerous position. Somewhere similar where Bangkok FC were as well. Just listen to the Sisaket fans. Yep, it's 1-1. They've equalized in the 70th minute. What a free kick from Bangkok, mate. 2-1. The space has just erupted. Full time. And Bangkok are your champions. Come on. Listen to the celebrations.
Yeah, cheers, Kevin. I was watching it with my mate here in Countryside Sisaket, and it was a really good game. Both of those sides are going to go all right next season. Congratulations, Bangkok FC. I believe the only unbeaten league side in the country this year. And mention as well, Maris Arakam, congratulations to them on their promotion over two legs against Patalong.
Certainly a great season for the North East.
Definitely. And we do say the P word, there is potential up here, Dale.
There certainly is. And I'd like to claim some of the credit because this all ties in with me moving up there. So maybe that's played a small part. It means I can get to more games next season as well in T2.
Well, you're taking credit for the North East and you're taking credit for Chombury's form when you're in the country. Is there any way you can't perform?
I'm not sure. There's plenty else I could probably claim credit for if I was to give it some thought.
It's only fair you should take credit where it's due.
All right then, okay, we'll take credit where it's due. I think at the start of the season, you tipped Buriram United to win the league. I tipped Bangkok United. They're still battling it out at the top of T1. I said that Nongbur Pichaya would come up from T2, which they did. You said Seascape United would come up from T3. And I think we both said that Bangkok FC would come up. So we've not done too badly. I think the only disaster, I've mentioned it before, I've tipped Ratbury to go down, I think. And the other one that I got completely hopelessly wrong was tipping Police Terror to finish in the top four.
Well, to be fair, Terror were having a great run until the money ran out, so you're blameless there. We're doing all right for a couple of blokes talking cobblers.
Right, we're going to end this week's podcast with a fascinating story. This is John, who's a very good friend of mine. We met in Thailand 27 years ago, and we used to go to a lot of games together. And this is one I missed out on, but John actually spent a night in Bangkok with someone who went on to become England manager. This is John's recollection of that evening. Hello and welcome, John. It's really nice to have you on the programme, mate.
Thank you. I've been a fan for a long time.
Fan of mine or a fan of the podcast?
A bit of both, really.
Well, we do go back a long way, don't we? A lot of my early football memories in Thailand are memories that you'll have as well, I guess.
Absolutely. We first met in 97, didn't we? And we played a lot of football together, twice a week, sometimes more, 11-a-side, 5-a-side. We kind of clicked quite well.
We did. We were a deadly striking duo. Our record stands against any that you could care to name, I think. Not only did we play together, but we went to a lot of games together, didn't we, in Thailand? All kinds of fixtures, friendlies, important World Cup qualifiers, Asian games. We seemed to be going up to Bangkok quite a lot, didn't we?
Premier League teams would come over, wouldn't they, for pre-season tours of Asia. And we'd go and see them, seeing Everton and a few others in those games.
The Arsenal game, we were both at, the famous 4-3 win with the massive storm at full time.
That was a cracking game.
You've actually come on to talk about a match that I didn't go to, bizarrely. And I was trying to work out why I wasn't there, and I've managed to track down the fixture. So it was played on the 21st of July, 1999. And the reason I wasn't there is because about 2 or 3 days before, I'd flown back to England. In spite of you and my then-girlfriend trying to lead me astray the night of my flight by plying me with copious amounts of beer. And I, if I remember correctly, I only just made the flight by the skin of my teeth.
You wouldn't have been upset if you'd missed it.
I probably wouldn't, to be fair, no. Till about 2 days later when I sobered up and realised what I'd missed out on.
You missed out on a classic with this Notts County game.
It was indeed the Notts County game. Thailand won 4-1. It was played at Super Chalasai in the heart of the city, and you were there. But it's not really the match you're here to talk about, is it? It's the aftermatch.
I'm glad you told me the score, because I had actually forgotten the score and the result. And it seemed secondary now. It was under Peter Withe, wasn't it? National team at the time. And they had that player who played for Huddersfield Town, Kitisak. He was the sort of star striker at the time, wasn't he?
That's it. Him and 10 others. That was the team back then, if I remember rightly.
It seemed to be. Yes, I can't recall any of the names. But it was a cracking game. I had a friend who was over sort of doing some travelling and was in the area at the time. And we thought it would be a good day out to watch it. As I recall, it was like an evening kickoff, maybe about 5:30 or something like that. But it didn't go on particularly late. But my girlfriend at the time, now my wife, was at work. And so she joined us just for kickoff in a work clobber. We'd run into some Notts County fans. We got talking to them in the stands.
I can't imagine there are many others there, John. It's not, like you were saying earlier, you know, you'd get your Arsenals, your Man Cities, your Man Uniteds, Liverpools coming over, and they'd always sell out pretty quickly. But I can't imagine a game against Notts County, with all due respect to that club, attracting a very large attendance.
Yeah, I think it was more, was there a tournament for Thailand to be warming up for? I think it served a couple of purposes. And I can't imagine it being that lucrative for Notts County, because, as I recall, there's lots and lots of space to sit down in the stadium. There was no bother finding a seat, really. It could have been chosen for the sort of Notts County manager's desire to go to Asia on a tour. Because they'd been to Malaysia before, I think, and Singapore. I think they'd sort of done a couple of stops. And Thailand, Bangkok was their last game.
I'm already guessing where this is going, John. You're kind of leading into something here, so...
The end of the match, when the final whistle went, I don't know if this is still the case when you go and watch a match in Thailand or the national team. I imagine security's a bit better now. But I think everyone just sort of went onto the pitch. And there's a little bit of a drop down from the stands to get onto the pitch, but there were so many people that didn't feel like doing anything wrong. So we got onto the pitch, and these Notts County fans were absolutely loving the experience and knew all the players. I've been quite excited, because my team Hull, one of their ex-players was playing for Notts County, and I seem to recall him being prolific for Hull, so I always had really fond memories. However, when I looked at his record now, it turns out he's not prolific at all. I think he scored 28 goals in about 100 games. But to me, he seemed quite prolific. So yeah. I went over and had a chat, quick chat to him. And
this is Dwayne Darby, is it?
This is Dwayne Darby. Anyway, obviously it earned him a transfer to Notts County, and he was part of their team for the day. I'm not really sure how this happened. They drifted back towards the changing room. So we were sort of chatting to them on the way. And again, I don't think this is probably possible nowadays, but again, security was fairly light at the time. We sort of stumbled into the press conference after the game. Yeah, I'm not really sure how we got in. Went into the press conference with these Notts County lads, those Helen and Aki and myself, watching the press conference. I think there was a bit of banter. We had a few drinks at this point. I have to make that clear. I think there was someone coming around at half-time with a cans of Chang on a tray. The next bit is a little bit hazy, but we were in front of the stadium, and the Notts County sort of team were getting on their bus to head back to the hotel. In these situations, after we've had a few drinks, we found ourselves on the bus, sort of led by these two Notts County fans who were getting a little bit overexcited. Anyway, the chairman wasn't keen, and we were politely asked to leave. However, we did get a sort of invite to where they were going out later that evening.
Can you remember the name of the bar?
I can remember its location. It was in the Pat Pong area of Bangkok. I can't remember the first part of the name. I think it ended with a go-go. We went off, grabbed some food, jumped in a taxi, and met up with the newly showered and changed Notts County squad in a bar in Pat Pong, which was a very strange experience. I do remember not everyone was particularly comfortable in the area. However, the manager of Notts County at the time did seem to be quite in his element.
And are you at liberty to say who that was?
Well, he went on to manage England. He was with Notts County for another 13 games, and he got headhunted and went off to join Bolton. And he was a successful Premier League manager for a number of years. Went to Newcastle, and then he got a reputation as a firefighter. Anyway, you know who I'm talking about, don't you? This is Sam Allardyce. Yeah. Anyway, he was very much in his element. However, not everyone else was. So we moved on. Do you remember Radio City? Sort of nightclub. Yeah. So we went there, and everyone was much more comfortable. It was really nice experience. I do recall buying a beer for Dwayne Darby and getting one in return and having a nice chat about his Hull City days. And maybe it was him that told me he was prolific. Perhaps that's where I've got it from.
This was pre-widely available internet, so you'd just have to take his word for it, wouldn't you? So you wouldn't be able to Google it straight away and say, hang on a minute, is this prolific? No. And show him his records.
Yeah, it was pre all of that, you know, things like smartphones. So these days, if you had a group of footballers turning up pre-season tour in Pat Pong, there'd be photos everywhere. The photos would be on the internet. It would be massive. I don't think that could happen these days, could it? I think they're too well managed, aren't they?
I mean, on a serious note of that, you know, we did have the incident with Leicester City a few years ago. So that does highlight, you know, how things have changed, you know, how much more scrutiny players are under and clubs are under when they come over to this part of the world.
Absolutely. It feels like a different time. Either way, my abiding memory of Sam was not that positive, to be honest. We didn't really want to chat in the Radio City nightclub. He wasn't that bothered about chatting. He was chatting to others. But Dwayne Darby, lovely fella.
He's coming on next week to give his side of the story, John, so you better be careful.
Is he? Right. I've said he was prolific, and I've said he's a lovely fella. He played brilliantly against Thailand.
I'll cut all the rest out and just leave that bit in, I think. I mean, obviously, you can't say too much about the night other than what you've already told us. But yeah,
good. I have consulted my lawyers, you know.
Yes. Well, they'll listen to this before it goes out. They do listen to it and pull it all apart. So don't worry. Nothing will get through the censors. At that time, was there any indication that Sam would go on to have the career? That, I mean, it's not really been a great career, has he? Like you said earlier, you know, as a renowned as a firefighter, he's the kind of person you pull in when your team's in trouble towards the end of the season. But was there any indication then that, you know, you could see him going on to have a career in football management? You're basing this on a few minutes with him in a bar in Patpong, John. So it's, you know, I'm not expecting great insight. And he refused to speak to you as well. So,
well, yeah, I'd like to claim that I had some influence on talking tactics with him, but it wasn't the case. His team obviously liked him. He was popular, but I think a lot of them were quite keen to get home, to be honest. I think they were flying back the next day. So I think he was popular because he'd obviously just taken them to promotion. Whether there was an indication that he was England quality, it's difficult to say. And we'll never know because he never tested himself at a major international tournament how he would have got on.
There was some sting, wasn't there? A newspaper sting that cost him his job.
But yeah, it seemed a bit unnecessary, really.
And yet you were sitting on this story, John. So you could have made a fortune. You probably never would have had to work again.
Lots of people were there, obviously. And the two Notts County fans I'm not in touch with anymore. So they've got the same memories of this, I'm assuming. So yeah, it never came out. But maybe it was a thing. Maybe Arsenal did it after their game against the Thai national team.
I got the impression they were very keen to get away. So I think they probably went straight to the airport after that match.
Well, yeah.
That was the year they missed out on the final. That game wouldn't have happened, the Thailand-Arsenal game, if it hadn't been for the Ryan Giggs goal in the semi-final, which, again, we watched together. We were in a bar in Korat, weren't we, watching that in the middle of the night? Okay. Which is a story for another day, John, I think, that one.
I think so, yeah. I've got vivid memories of that occasion. Yeah, that was Songkran, wasn't it? Happy days.
Happy days, indeed. Anyway, thanks, mate. It's been great to catch up, and I've really enjoyed hearing this story again. I have heard it before, obviously. Yeah. But it's great that we can share it now after all this time. I think 25 years is probably long enough to have sat on this and now share it with an expectant public. So thank you for that. I really appreciate it. And hopefully we'll catch up soon and maybe get to a Thailand game in the not too distant future.
Absolutely. Or we'll go down to see Notts County.
Yeah. All right. We'll see. So thanks a lot, mate. And speak soon.
Okay. Yeah. Take care. All the best.
Blimey, who'd have thought it? Big Sam, I thought he'd have headed for the temples.
I think there was probably quite a bit that John left out of that, quite wisely. And I did have to edit one or two things as well. But as we said in the course of the interview, I mean, that wouldn't happen anymore, would it? Far more innocent times, I think, all round. Anyway, hope you enjoyed that. We've probably got a couple more of those with power sleeves as well for later episodes. That's all for this week. So thanks again for listening. Thanks to everyone who's contributed. And we can look forward to the T... Well, say look forward to. We can... We've got the T1 relegation battle to cover in the next couple of weeks, plus the T2 playoffs. And of course, semi-finals in both cup competitions. So thanks very much for listening. And we'll see you all next week.
Yeah, try and get to games. I know they're a bit more sparse now. Get to some amateur football if you're in Bangkok.